Polish-Australian Business Forum presents. Unity. Stories about us.
Marks 50 years of diplomatic relations between Poland and Australia. I am Leonie Tillman, and I'll be interviewing 10 notable Australians of Polish heritage across business, science, and the arts about their stories. We now invite you to celebrate our unity. Stories about us. Marzena Waszykowska describes herself as a photo media artist. She's been exhibited around the world in Poland, Australia, New Zealand, Belgium, Germany, South Africa, and the United States of America. She's been a finalist 5 times in the National Photographic Portrait Prize, which is part of the National Portrait Gallery in Canberra, which also has a regional exhibition that tours around Australia. In 2021, she was selected for the Lens Culture's Critics' Choice Award. And another great achievement of hers has been that she's been admitted as a member of the Polish Art Photographers Association. I ask her to describe her work for us.
I use, of course, the basic kind of skills of photography, but go beyond those core photographic competencies to add additional skills as they are necessary or as I need them. And photomedia infers that a fully rounded image maker in the 21st century, rather than maybe someone who's entirely reliant on the camera.
And can you elaborate a little bit when you say the parts that go beyond? What are those parts that go beyond?
I have used stop motion animation with my images. I'm not a point and shoot kind of a photographer or image maker. So I move away from the documentary and I construct images. And I appreciate photography for its veracity, but I use the medium to construct images rather than to wait for an image to present itself and then take a photograph. I guess you would think about that method of working would suit a documentary photographer or a press or a street photographer. Yeah, there's a lot of latitude in my work.
And is that something that unifies all of your work, that goes across your whole body of work?
Yeah, I think so. The methodology is the same regardless of subject matter. So I used to use analog cameras and work in the darkroom, produce darkroom prints. And, you know, a lot of magic happens in the darkroom. But now my practice has shifted to using digital cameras with image files, and the magic happens in Photoshop. And of course, also there's the emphasis on the print. So just as in the darkroom, analog darkroom, the printing is another world.
So that's the methodology. Are there any other unifying factors across the content, the thematics of your work?
I think of the landscape as a character playing a role in my images, much like I would for a person in a portrait. So ideally, there's action depicted or the viewer is engaging in some kind of a moment in time. Something's just happened or it's about to happen. Either way, the viewer's in the middle of it. And I'm really interested in holding the viewer quite close to the image to have that kind of intimate body experience with the work on the wall. It doesn't work with the work on a computer screen. We lose something there, but standing in front of the work, the scale is very important, and being in the gallery, not too high for the work to sit, quite well situated in proportion to the body. And my previous preoccupation was to trap the viewer. Perhaps I've relaxed on that, and that carried over to the portraits as well as the landscapes. I was quite aware of that.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about the awards that you've been participating in. You've been featured and displayed at the National Portrait Gallery in the National Photographic Portrait Prize in 2011, 15, 16, 18, and again this year. Can you tell me a bit about those portraits? Because I believe they're part of a series.
I've been working on this style of image making for about a decade, and I'm incredibly happy to be included in the NPPP, and now for the fifth time. And each year, you know, I make some images with the intention of submitting, and usually I submit. On other occasions, I've submitted and I've not been chosen. So, you know, these are the vagaries of submissions, but, you know, it's wonderful that to be able to be part of something as anticipated as that award. And then, you know, the gallery takes it on a tour of five regional galleries.
And I understand this is part of your negotiating the family portrait series, is that right?
Yes, correct, yeah.
And I know there's some idiosyncrasies of that. Can you explain the series?
Negotiating a family portrait seemed like the right kind of a title for a group of images that I intended to make. It came about maybe 2015, 16, when it occurred to me that there's a lot of information that the audience may or may not have known already about the family just from interviews perhaps that Mia has done. And I became very aware of the mythology or creating other kind of truths. And I think I called that a study of history, myth, and identity. And I was really interested in my own truthfulness about making the image. I'm not interested in the veracity of the image. I am quite happy to make myths. As much as I think, though, something has to be very on point about what each person brings to the portrait each year. For me, it's a bit of a call to action in relation to my portraiture, because we're all in different cities, and it meant that for one weekend or one week, we would all come together and kind of assess or summarize the year and think about what we wanted to bring to the portrait. And yeah, that was the rise of that idea, negotiating a family portrait. You know, you don't want to reveal everything about your family, and you don't want to hold back too much either. There needs to be something for the audience or for the viewer.
In 2021, Margena was selected for the Lens Culture's Critics' Choice Award. Now, this is an award where photographers send in their applications from across 150 different countries, and then industry experts come together to select their favourite three. This year, she was selected by Joanna Milter, the director of photography for The New Yorker, with a photograph from her Negotiating the Family Portrait series. The photograph was called A COVID Kind of Day.
So that photograph was taken at a beach in Tathra. So that's the southeast New South Wales coast in April 2020. The photograph is of my granddaughter Olympia doing cartwheels in a little dress, orange dress with oranges on it. And standing to the right of Olympia is my daughter Mia in a coat. It was a cold and windy evening. Her back is to the camera and she's looking into the clouds. You know, we normally spend a lot of time with our oldest daughter in this location and grandchildren, and this was the beginning of the lockdown. We were lucky to have got down there. And just as I got there, Olympia was super keen to show me her new skills and doing cartwheels, and I felt like she did about 100 of them. And I have so many photographs. She was unstoppable in that way that I remember my daughter being when she was doing splits, you know. Oh, how is this one? Is this one better? Did I do it perfectly? Did I get down lower? And and so I was absolutely preoccupied with Olympia. And then all of a sudden I became aware that there was Mia standing right next to her, and that there was this amazing sky. And it reminded me of Caspar David Friedrich, The Wanderer Above the Sea Fog, and of course Eugene von Gerard, Northeast View of Northern Tokyo. top of Mount Kosciuszko. So the references kind of struck me. There was Olympia in her orange dress doing these cartwheels, the shape of which obliquely made reference to a mischievous COVID germ, which kind of calls out to that setting orange sky, which is like hopeful and optimistic, but totally oblivious. And next to her, Mia stands in a dark coat, pensively examining those dark clouds forming above her. So it visually summarized the predicament we find ourselves in then and now. Joanna Milter is a wonderful supporter of women photographers at large, you know, internationally. So it's a real honor to be picked by her. She sees so much photography on a daily basis. And I really appreciated that. Yeah, I'd like to push boundaries of what a formal portrait is, but I have loved the opportunity to have been part of that show, despite, you know, how I approach what I want to challenge about portraiture, you know.
Yeah, wonderful. So obviously we've spoken about portraits a lot, and the COVID kind of day kind of brings in the landscape. But I've understood that the built environment and waterscapes are all very important parts of your work too.
Yeah. So the recent work that I've produced, and it's part of the PhD, is titled Earth Self-Correcting Systems. At the moment, four series exist: the Gold Coast series, the Alaska series, the Meditation series, and the Alaska Fires. It's a work which considers human-induced climate change. The series is a response to our environmental predicament and advances a notion of a sublime, where we stand before nature, wondering what on earth we have unleashed. This series references the vocabulary of the sublime to visualize impacts of climate change on coastal settlements. And I propose that the most relevant contemporary sublime is the ecological sublime. So there are lots of sublimes, and it's a, you know, it's a term historically that is used and sometimes overused, and it's in fashion and then it isn't. And using that vocabulary kind of describes the freaky weather events that are beyond controllable. And for me, that's the method, the avenue.
Yeah, because in popular culture, people talk about sublime meaning incredibly positive. And I remember in my studies from literature, there was this combination of awesome in its true sense and terror as well. Is that kind of that relationship between the two of them?
I mean, I love water. I spent about 2 months on a ship coming across to Australia, so I was totally immersed in the landscape of water. I don't know if I loved every bit of it, but it was mesmerizing. I do remember that. And so, and you know, sometimes it was a little bit terrifying because of storms, and other times it was absolutely kind of non-eventful. And sometimes we couldn't see very far, you know, around the equator. There was a lot of fog, or at least that's how I kind of think about it. So, yeah, the sea holds all those, that range of emotions, I think, possibilities. And of course, water is so part of us. I mean, we're XX percent of water, and we drink it, we bathe in it, we need it to grow food. So, and then, you know, there are storms like the ones that have just hit the States. And that's something that essentially humans have caused, the weather events. I'm particularly interested in the sea.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea that it's something that keeps us alive, or it exists within us and is part of us, yet could destroy us as well. I've never thought of that before. Mm. And you've held many group and solo exhibitions over your career, mostly in Australia, but also in Belgium, Germany, South Africa, and of course, Poland. And in 1998, you returned to your hometown in Poland after receiving a grant to produce a collection of work based around your experience. Could you tell us about that journey?
I was really lucky to receive that grant from Arts ACT. The intention was to return for the first time, mainly because my oldest daughter was 12. She was just a little bit older than when I arrived in Australia. And so I really wanted to close that loop, or at least I knew that this would be an incredible opportunity for the children to be kind of actors in my images. They'd already been actors in my images up to that point, and they loved the idea of photography. They kind of vied for attention. It seemed like, kind of an ideal situation. So it was positive things and it was negative things. And I was absolutely filled with gratitude to return to the place in my heart, which meant home, because I left without knowing that I would return, certainly within a reasonable time frame. I wanted to recreate some of the memory images that I had that had been swimming in my head, because I realized that photography was really key to memory and key to my memories of Poland. But there were also many photographs that didn't exist, and I wish they had existed. So I kind of, in a very naive way, thought, oh, I can go and make them now. Yeah, so it was great.
Can you tell us maybe about one of those that didn't exist that you then created?
My nanny's apartment didn't exist. Actually, most of the places I lived in didn't exist or I didn't have access to. But for example, my nanny's apartment, because she was such a precious person to me, and she had by then died and there was no way to go inside her apartment, I essentially grew up in that apartment. But I was able to access the outside of the building, and that was amazing and painful. And it was, I made photographs that I needed to make. I think I could have done more, come to think of it now. You can always do more. And despite, those restrictions that I faced, I think I was, happy with the images. When my cousin came to visit us in Canberra in 86, he brought a box of family photographs. And I realized that a lot of my childhood memories were in that box. They existed as little stories that were accompanied by the photograph.
Yeah, the memory of the photograph rather than the actual memory.
So then I doubted what I actually remembered. And it's an interesting thing, because I know now that when my children look at the very early photographs, they need a memory jogger, and that's me, because they now make stories about the photographs and what transpired around that image. So I guess memory is a bit of a slippery thing, but one memory that did stay with me is when I returned to Szczecin. I felt like I had a flawless map burnished into my brain. I don't think I got lost once.
And can you retrace at all that journey from leaving Poland to Australia?
It was my mum worked for Polish Ocean Lines at the time. She organized cargo, and she must have had some accounting duties, or she allocated cargo to particular vessels. So she was able to travel at a time when not many people were able to travel in 74. I really admire her bravery. She felt like maybe an intrepid explorer, really, because she went on this very long journey, not really knowing what she might find in Australia. And it was, a journey by a cargo vessel, because that was the company that she worked for. And we were going to then return back via the Suez Canal. So we came through the Panama Canal, New Zealand and Melbourne. And then she married within 3 months of our time here. So, of course, it was kind of a shocking experience, really, for me. And, understandably, you couldn't tell anyone really, or too many people about. And I think she also didn't know what her intention was, but nonetheless. So really the trip across was kind of formative. I mean, I'm still influenced by it when I think about it. I mean, water is key, and that idea of being surrounded by water is very much in my images. I love that.
The fact it was a cargo ship as well, I imagine there's not many people on such a ship, so you're sort of engaging with the landscape and the waterscape in a very different way, as if it were a liner.
Exactly, that's right. So there are no distractions, really. I mean, the social outings might have been a film that I was too young to watch, but nonetheless, occasionally snuck into. I spent a lot of, almost every night up on the deck, looking out at the sea, chatting. And most of my day, I think, was outside looking at the water.
And when you went back to Poland, you also engaged with your father again. How did that go?
You know, after 24 years, it's very hard to kind of build a bridge in a child-father relationship. So I guess it needed to be approached a different way. And so we formed, you know, a slightly different relationship. I mean, a good one. And he's still he's no longer alive. But, you know, a very important person. So it was good. I think I idolized him a lot and felt that my mum was a baddie. And for a while. And that was unfair.
And when did you realize that you weren't going back to Poland, and how did that feel?
We arrived in Canberra on the 1st of December. So the school term was still on, and there was probably a week of school. I don't know, maybe 2 weeks of school. I think pretty much on day two, my mum said, "Why don't you go to school?" So it took me a little moment to think, you know, figure that out. I think I realized then, when there was some discussion about school and when we were going back, and she didn't know, and just not knowing was the alarm bell. I did go to school. I went to year six for a week, and that was a lot of fun. And really, retrospectively, I should have done year six again and learned some English. But my mum was keen for me to progress, and so she enrolled me the very next year in high school. And, you know, that was Australia of 75, and there was a lot of prejudice there to migrants. So it was a tough year learning English and keeping up with the curriculum. I mean, I missed the curriculum. So essentially I don't have year six or seven history, geography, you know, all those things that you learn in year six and seven, because I missed so many classes.
For a contribution to photography, Marzena was admitted as a member of the Polish Art Photographers Association. I ask her how this came about and what this means for her.
I was introduced to Krystyna Wojciechowiak, part of the Polish Art Photographers Association in Szczecin. She was the director, and she really liked my work, and she was an amazing woman. So she suggested that we might go to Warsaw, take a body of work. I took a body of work. Actually, I took a couple bodies of work to show in Szczecin on that trip. And that work got me into the association, which was, you know, a big deal then. And I was chuffed to have been part of that. Yeah, I think it meant a lot, maybe in the 60s, 50s, 60s. Perhaps it didn't give you as many privileges in the, you know, 90s, 2000s. But, you know, it's still, I'm really pleased to be part of that group.
And what is that group? What does that mean in the bigger picture? Is that leaving a legacy behind? Is it something along those lines?
I think so, yeah. It's certainly a survey of photography. It's quite broad. It's documentary, and it's street, and it's really whatever one makes it. I think initially the idea that it enabled the photographer to get jobs or, you know, access to the industry, maybe preferential treatment perhaps. I think it doesn't mean that anymore. People are much more enterprising and not so reliant, but it is, you know, there is a legacy with that, and there is an archive. And just in 2017 and 18, I was able to do a little hop skip of those galleries, or certainly in Todon and Warsaw and Szczecin before that. So that was nice to be able to access those galleries.
Yeah, and does it create a connection for you between the Australia and the Polish parts of yourself?
I love returning to Szczecin. I'm in Poland, but Szczecin, I was born there. I love the city, its age, history, patina, the bricks, the smells. It's what you would call a green city. There are many parks and green corridors. And one of my aunties decades ago was part of the decision making of which trees were planted. And the linden trees prevailed. So in June, there's the most pervasive fragrance of linden trees. So, you know, I'm sure I returned just for that reason alone. It lasts for about 3 weeks. But, you know, for whatever reason I return, I think it's important for me to return. I think about it as a studio, like a self-funded residency to return. So I've got kind of a space, a physical and a kind of a mental space where I go to produce work. So I think to be back in a professional capacity is great. I'd like to be more involved, perhaps to show more in Poland and in Europe, to perhaps be included maybe in some of the contemporary art institutions.
And do you feel that these different locations really bring a different part of your art forward?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Certainly the way I think about constructing images, a lot of it comes from my archives.
I would like to move into a little bit about your influences. So your biggest influences from Poland or Australia?
On the art front, there are certainly some amazing sublime painters that I'm absolutely influenced by, but that's probably broadly in Europe. So Peter Balke in Norway, just amazing work.
And what about influences beyond the art world that are more influences on your life more broadly?
You know, family is important. Spirituality is important. What's important to me is multiculturalism, because I've experienced the lack of it, or, you know, those teething problems initially. It would seem that Poland's opening up to multiculturalism. It starts maybe with business, and then it permeates through food and then physical kind of relationships and friendships with people. You know, we are so lucky that we have that in Australia. I really appreciate that. You know, so in Poland, my range of friends are probably mostly Polish, German, Ukrainian, Russian. And, you know, in Australia, my very close friends are Australian, of course. I know Irish, Scottish, Kenyan, Ghanaian, Portuguese, Chilean, Finnish, Norwegian, American, you know, just such a vast variety of people. And I love that. I think that's so important to a healthy society. I think lines on a map are problematic.
And you mentioned earlier that success would mean taking your career back to Europe and Poland more regularly. Is there something else that success means for you beyond that?
Yeah, success is a little bit like fame, and it's elusive, and it's probably not what I would invest in. You know, I'm happy working, and I'm driven to do more work, and kind of it's a challenge for me. So that's kind of what drives me. I mean, with art, there are few things that I would list, like sales and commissions and exhibitions and publications and, you know, maybe teaching or mentoring. And they're all really great things that, you know, can make you feel like you're doing something worthwhile. It's lovely to make a work and then that work to go and live in someone's house. And, you know, it's like babies going to new homes and commissions that I've had. For example, the hospital, it's great to know that people have actually seen that, that work, and, you know, they spend a bit of time with that. And so, of course, exhibitions more and publications, yes, more, please. And, you know, teaching, I stepped away from teaching for a couple of years from 2019. And this year I've taken some workshops locally with Photo Access, which is such a vibrant community organization. I've really enjoyed it. I've just felt like a productive member of the community to be, you know, speaking.
Yeah, what is Photo Access?
They run numerous workshops, really clever workshops, lots of interactions and collaborations with other institutions. So the particular workshop I ran was a collaboration with Canberra Museum and Gallery. There was an exhibition there called Seeing Canberra. One of my works was in that exhibition. And so the workshop was kind of titled Re-Seeing Canberra. So, you know, it was another iteration using the exhibition as a springboard. And so there's an opportunity to do a residency. So I think there are 4 residents each year. People can apply from, I think, all over. They give a residency to a graduate, at least one from the School of Art. So they're incredibly kind of supportive and vibrant in the community. Great director, great people working there. Yeah, pleased to be in some small way part of that organization.
Mm. And if you look at this point back over your entire career, what's been the biggest and most impactful moment?
I don't know. I think each moment, you know, like being in the portrait gallery is wonderful, and maybe the Critics' Choice is great. I think they're the things that keep you going.
Yeah, lovely. Do you feel Polish or Australian or a combination?
I'm not in the least nationalistic. I can watch a soccer game between Poland and Australia and enjoy the skill of the players.
That's a good measure. I like that.
I'm drawn to both countries. You know, it's ideally, it'd be great to spend 6 months here and 6 months there, but I feel both Polish and Australian, or and neither, essentially. I go back to Poland and I experience what you might call kind of loosely discrimination. People don't think I'm Polish, or they don't think I belong, or I shouldn't have any expectations. Probably my Polish speaking skills are not so great. And so I stand out as not a native Polish speaker. But, you know, I feel a strong visceral connection to Poland, just as I love being back here when I return. So I long for those, you know, all those things like raw milk and kefir and duck and cabbage. And I put to bed those notions of home and belonging that used to worry me in the 90s. And it's not that important to me. I think we've lived in other countries briefly. So there are real things to go back for, like physical things, like the quality of light, that you can't drag your family halfway around the world just to experience. But nonetheless, if you can, you should. And so it's just wherever you are with your family, that's your home. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I guess that's what it is, really, where your people are.
That sounds very human.
Very human, yeah.
Marzena, thank you so much.
Nice chatting with you. Thank you, Leonie.
For more information on this project, go to pabf.com.au.
This podcast was brought to you by the Polish Embassy in Australia, Polish Investment and Trade Agency, Polaron, the Freedom and Democracy Foundation, English for Business, and SBS Radio. This was put together by Marchmade Collective.